Hey, it's John Canzano. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe. And thanks to all the listeners and all of our sponsors who help make the Bald-Faced Truth the number one sports radio show in Portland. Enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. John Canzano.
People don't like to hear the truth all the time. You know, people ask you questions, but they don't actually necessarily want to hear the answers.
Love him.
I mean, I like the guy. I listen to him every day.
Canzano, what's going on, man?
He's dead sexy.
I think he does a damn good job.
I'm going to be rooting for this young Portland team, which, you know, is a terrific team. You guys just have a terrific nucleus.
You pay attention to detail. That's why you're so successful.
I just think he's honest. Yeah. Straightforward and to the point.
You're bringing up something that's probably the average sports fan watching the game didn't pick up on.
I'm really glad to see that someone who speaks their mind is not afraid to tell it how it is.
He's a smart guy. That's my dude, man. Yeah, I know him, man. I let my mother listen to him.
Hate him.
You don't want to get nobody a second chance. Trump.
To represent that as some sort of subterfuge by John Canzano, I would have expected far better.
He just sounds like an egotistical idiot.
He was rude, crude, and wrong.
Love to hate it.
Yo, John, I can't stand you. I can't stand you, but I come back every day to listen to the show.
Bald-faced truth teller.
Who is he to judge?
Well, he can raise your eyebrows a lot.
I was angry. He just got my feathers that day big time.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
I love that you're out there. I love that you're listening. I love that a UPS driver came up to my house the other day, and I knew this was coming. A friend of ours sent us a bottle of wine. I don't know if you've ever had wine delivered to your house, but I'm not opposed to receiving wine in the mail. But UPS brought a bottle of wine, and in order for me to accept the bottle of wine, I had to sign for it. You had to be over 21 and sign for a bottle of wine. I didn't know that. I know that when you walk into an establishment that is selling alcohol, you have to go up and you have to present ID if you are lucky enough to look like you're close to 21. And so I was curious when the UPS driver came up to the door. Was he going to card me? And the guy came up and I started to wait for him to ask for ID, and he says, I need your signature, you're receiving alcohol, so you need to be over 21 or whatever. And as he handed me this giant bottle of red wine that my friend, our family friend had sent to us, which was a nice gesture. The guy just came out in the summer, he stayed with us, he volunteered at Camp Exceptional, and then he sent us a bottle of wine. I was like, no, thank you for coming out and helping put on that summer camp that the BFT Foundation and Camp Exceptional put on together. And I got this giant bottle of wine, magnum-sized bottle of wine. I mean, huge, like too big to drink with a straw. And I signed for it, and the UPS driver says to me, hey, I love the show. I listen to the show every day. And what we proceeded to do was we had this conversation about him being in the truck all day. And he's driving, and if you're a UPS driver, you see those guys, the big brown, you see the UPS driver, and you see him in the truck. And the UPS driver's usually in shape. So, because he's jumping in and out of the truck, he's carrying packages. I don't know what UPS drivers are doing when they're not driving the truck, but they might be doing CrossFit all day long because all these guys are in shape. And we have big stairs. Anybody who's ever been to my house knows we have big stairs that lead up from the street all the way up to the door. And if you're carrying heavy packages, that's a hike up there. And I have it so I can see the bad guys coming. I like that long, look, bad guy has to climb all the way up the stairs. So if we're going to get in a fight at the doorstep, you're going to be out of breath when you're there. But the UPS driver, he's in shape, he's there, and we're talking about him listening to the show. And I really did say it. I said, you're my guy. Like, you're my guy because you're in your truck all day long. And if you are a landscaper, if you are a delivery driver, if you are a mom who's carpooling around four kids, dropping them at sporting events, picking them up from camp, going by Gymboree or whatever, you're my guy or girl because I know you're in the car and you're listening to the show. I do this every once in a great while because I want to give a shout out to all those great people who are making this radio show, whether you're listening in Portland on 102.9 or listening in Eugene, Oregon on Fox Sports Eugene 95.7 FM, or you're listening in Klamath Falls on our newest affiliate on the BFT Radio Network on 93.3 FM, ESPN affiliate there in Klamath Falls. Wherever you may be listening to this radio show, if you would like to call in and tell me about your experience, Tell me where you listen to the show, how you digest it. What part of the day are we with you? I would love to hear from you at 503-417-7575. You can also tweet at me, at John Canzano BFT, because a lot of you are working, and it's not cool like if 15 UPS drivers call into the show and they're like, hey, I listen to the show. I also listen to the show. But I want to hear from you. If you are somebody who listens to this show regularly, where are you when you're doing it? Are you on your lunch hour? Because I suspect some of you jump into the car right about this time and you're off to go do what? Have lunch, meet a client, be in the car. Others of you are at your cubicle and making this radio show part of your day from the cubicle. Others of you are probably at home working from home or maybe not working or retired. I want to hear from all the listeners of the show who maybe you're not somebody who regularly calls into a show. Maybe this is the first time you ever heard the show. And maybe you're not a regular thing. You're like, yeah, I was just sampling and I just tuned in and you happen to be on. I want to hear from you. I want to hear about your experience. And then I want to tell you about my experiences, too, when I meet a lot of you out there. A lot of times, the first thing you say is, hey, I'm sorry. I don't mean to bug you with this. You're not bugging me. I love talking to you. I talk to servers in restaurants. I talk to bus drivers, TriMet drivers. I talk to the guys who work in the garage here. I gave the story. I was in the parking lot of the Safeway, and I shop at the Safeway. And this lady is like unloading her groceries, and she's like, hey, we talk about you around the dinner table or whatever you're discussing. We end up kicking around. I love that stuff. I love hearing from her because it puts a face. Like, I get into this studio, and all day long, I got to look at AC Coleman, who's the board operator. So, heaven help me. Show me something other than AC Coleman and come up and be like, hey, listen to the show. I can see Gliss down there. I can see Adriana down there today. I look at these three all day long. Give me something else to look at. Somebody else to talk to. I'm just kidding, guys. 503-417-7575 is the number. Brad's in Silverton. Brad, where do you listen to this show?
Hey, man. So I work for FedEx. And a lot of our trucks, we actually don't have radios. So I'm not sure how the UPS guy was listening to the show. But we have a few rentals and actually... get to listen to you any chance I get, man. I listen to you. I really appreciate you.
I love that you're out there, and I get you probably pay better attention to the weather than most jobs. Like when it was scorching hot, are you checking the temperatures every morning?
Oh yeah, definitely, man. Luckily, this rental's got AC. I'm in a minivan, yeah. So
there you go. I bet you. Is it like every day? Do you get a different rig, or do you get the same ride every day?
Me, yeah, man. I kind of bounce around.
Yeah, so you're looking for a nice ride. I appreciate that you're out there. You can also download the app, the 1029 750 The Game app on your iPhone. You can get the show, whether or not you got a radio inside the vehicle. I'm just saying, why would they not have a working radio inside a vehicle? Because they want you to work? Don't they know you're more productive when you're listening to me? Everybody knows that. That when you're listening to me, you're more productive. On Twitter, Kyle says, UPS, listen every day on the app. Also, I run 2 or 3 miles every other day before work to stay in shape. I need to do that. Alonzo on Twitter says, I just jumped in the car. I'm leaving the Portland State Campus Rec Center, and I'm looking forward to listening to the show every day. Love that you're out there, Alonzo. Ground Chuck on Twitter says, shout out to All in Pest Control. Gets up at 4:30 in the morning. Ron says he listens on his headphones while working in the wood shop in Corvallis. Thanks for keeping me entertained. Ron, thanks for listening. Let's go to Tyler, who's calling in. Tyler, where are you listening?
I'm at Shadow Hills Country Club today.
I love it. Is that where you are every day, or that's just today?
I wish. I'm in the golf business, so I was listening to you in Klamath Falls earlier in the week. I was in Bend this week, Portland this week, and now I'm just kind of finishing my Friday because I live in Crestwell, of all places. And I'm just finishing up my week at Shadow Hills, making my third to last call.
I love that you're you're bouncing around the BFT radio network. Like, we're trying to get into Bend and Medford next, and love to be in those two places so I can follow you everywhere in your workday. What do you do in the golf business?
I sell turf equipment now. So I work for this company called RMT, and I sell big turf equipment and Kubota and Cushman and Jacobson. And before that, I worked for a company called Pacific Golf and Turf out of Portland and sold EasyGo golf carts. So.
I have to think that in the turf business, because the rain we get in the fall and the spring, that becomes big business in golf around here.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It was a tough spring on us, actually, because it was so wet. But, now they need it because it's so hot. The grass is growing.
Love it. Tyler, thanks for being there. I love it. Let's go to Beth, who's on I-5. Beth, what are you doing?
Hey, John. While I'm driving for work, I listen to you daily. I go all over the metro area, and today I'm driving from Portland to Salem to see clients.
What kind of work do you do?
Certainly, what do I do? Oh, I'm in marketing, so I work with small to medium businesses, helping them market themselves, both online and in print and medium.
How do I do marketing this show?
You do a very good job, Mr. Gonzano.
Thank you, Beth. I love that you're out there, and I love that people think women don't listen to sports radio. I got to tell you, I think we have an army of women who listen to this show.
I do, and in fact, I get kudos all the time because I'm always scooping my friends, including my boyfriend, and they're like, how do you know that? And she goes, she listens to sports radio all day long.
Yep.
And
smart.
I do, and I love her.
You're not dumb. I appreciate that, Beth. There's Beth on the I-5. Here's Ethan. What's up, Ethan?
Hey, John. I'm actually one of your interns on the show. I come in every Monday.
Monday, Ethan. How are you, man? Where are you listening?
I'm good. I'm in Newburgh right now. When I'm not at your show, I'm a Napa delivery driver.
Really? See, I didn't know that. Versatility, baby.
That's right, yeah, Tuesday through Saturday, so I'm in the car for most of the day, and I'm going from auto place, dropping off parts, and I'm listening to the show.
Tell me what people who don't get to go behind the scenes, because people always say, can I come in, can I shadow the show? You pretty much do that on Mondays. What have you seen, or what do you know from being behind the scenes that maybe the average listener doesn't know?
How much, and this is on Glitz right here, how much the producers do. You never know that because you just hear the voice of the show, as in you. You don't know how much the producers do behind the scenes, and that was one of the first things that caught my eye.
Yeah, a lot of busy people. Adriana down there, you on Mondays, appreciate you. AC kind of does some stuff a few times. Trey is in Beaverton. Trey, where are you listening, and what do you do?
I'm in my work truck, and I work for Lithia Motors as a facilities engineer. I basically fix the dealerships.
Love that.
Yeah.
So
love your show, man.
Are you normally just driving dealership to dealership, or where are you traveling?
My home store is Mercedes-Benz of Beaverton, but I usually drive from here to the Oregon City dealership, the Subaru there, Mercedes of Portland, and Beaverton Mini.
And, so, you're listening on 102.9 and 750 in Portland. Are you listening to the FM or the AM signal?
The FM signal, and then when I'm out of my truck, I turn on the app on my iPhone.
I love it. I'm with you all day. I love that. Thank you, Trey.
Right on. Have a good one.
There's Trey in Beaverton. Let's take one more. Andrew is in Aloha. Andrew. Where do you listen?
Hey, JT.
What are you doing?
I'm in my car listening. I drive around, do deliveries for my family's flower shop. I got you guys on from, 8, 7 o'clock in the morning with DP to 6 or 7 o'clock when, Mariners break Dino at night. So I got you guys, all day long.
I love that you're locked in there. And do you listen on the FM or the AM?
I am on 102.9.
Love that. What do you like about the show? Why do you like about the station? Why do you leave it on this one?
I love, all the other stations. There's no personality on all the other stations. I love you guys. I love DP in the morning. I loved Rome when Rome was on the radio. But, Justin and Devon do a great job. I used to work with Brian Perkins with the arena football team. He's one of the reasons I still listen to the, 102.9 The Game. So, you guys are the best in the business.
I appreciate that. I happen to agree with that. And because people ask me all the time, like, why have you been at this station for 10 years? And part of it is I want to be with blue chip entities. the advertisers of this show know that there have been other companies that want me to advertise their products. I won't do it because if it's not a blue chip product that I use, that I feel good about, like, and you hear the stable of advertisers where you hear my voice advertising their deal, I know that you, the listener, are going to take me up on that when you hear me talk about a medical place or an experience that I had at a restaurant, or if it's, you know, in the case of like my heating and cooling company, First Call Heating and Cooling, or John's Waterproofing, or Mattress Firm, that I always know that you're going to trust my recommendation. I know that. And I'm not going to let you down. And it's the same thing with the show and the station. Like, I like anchoring the lineup here. I like being in the heart of the lineup. I like being in middays. I don't think that Portland is the kind of commuter city that maybe the Bay Area or L.A. is, where people in the morning and afternoon. I know the audience middays, and I know that I'm one of you. And I know that, like, I see the blue-collar people who are working and the moms who call in and the dads who call in. You've got kids. You own a house. You've got buying power. I know who my audience is. And look, this isn't going to go on forever. And I think about all the time, probably like you do, I look at my 401k and I think about, like, okay, how much longer do I have to do this stuff for? I'd like to go do some other things. But I love doing the show. And somebody yesterday, I had the Pac-12 Network guys in studio. And during, I wish we could have been rolling during the commercial break, because Yogi Roth and Mike Yam said to me, your show is different than any other radio show that we do. And I said, what do you mean by that? And they said, you're having a conversation. It's like a Barbara Walters-like interview where we're having a conversation about the business, the teams, whatever. And they said, why is that, that you can just have that conversation? And when we feel like we're interviewed in other places, it feels like we're just being peppered about the same old sports stuff. And for me, it's that I don't need the show to be all about the nuts and bolts of sports. I just want to have a conversation. And there is no pressure hanging over my head to execute and get your attention on a given day. I just want to do quality work. I want to interview Larry Holmes. I want to talk to the Pac-12 Network guys about what it's like to work for the Pac-12 Network. I want to talk to Gary Anderson about, you know, his football team, sure, but also about, like, does he mow his own lawn? There's, like, questions that I have for him that go up and beyond sports. And I think that exists because of the job security I have and because of the fact that, you know, I'm in a guaranteed contract situation. I've been here for 10 years, and I know how it ends in radio. I know how it always ends in radio. You hold a cardboard box and you walk out of the building. But for me, I just decided early on that we're going to do it our way, and the staff here gets it, and I hire the best people that I've surrounded myself with, like the all-conference coordinator and the best offensive and defensive coordinator. There's nobody smarter than Adriana here, I'll tell you that. And she's podcasting the show. And Gliss works his backside off, booking guests, texting with me last night. He's scanning TV, found something really funny on TV that we're going to play coming up. We try to do the best show that we can possibly do for you. And maybe that makes it different. I don't know. I love everybody who listens to the show, whether you're driving a dump truck or you're a machinist at Garmin in Salem, or you're an electrician. Ben, the electrician, has checked in. I love that you're out there. You leave it right here. You got the bald-faced truth on the BFT Radio Network.
This is the BFT with John Canzano.
I'm skeptical of the Carmelo Anthony thing, and I know it would take a little of this and a little of that, but I still, look, on a summer day, and I still consider this summer, I'm going to cling to summer to the end of summer, but on a summer day with not a lot else going on in August, we're waiting for college football. The Carmelo Anthony thing becomes interesting to me. If you are a college football fan, I've got Gina Mizell and Danny Moran of The Oregonian, who both cover the Oregon State Beavers. I had them in the studio earlier, just a few minutes ago, and I taped a little bit with them on the quarterback situation, the wide receiver situation, the running back situation at Oregon State. I want you to hear it, because it's both of these guys who are experts. But I'll play that here coming up in about 5 minutes. I want to talk about Carmelo first. I have been skeptical that Carmelo Anthony could end up in a Blazers uniform, because I don't think Carmelo Anthony wants to live in Portland. and he happens to hold a no-trade clause in his contract. There's only four players in the league who have that clause. And Carmelo's got it, and he, you know, he will exercise that clause. There's no amount of convincing from Damian Lillard or CJ McCollum, bless their hearts. There's no amount of Neil Olshey, you know, smiling and grinning at him. There's no amount of Portland fans tweeting at Carmelo saying, we'd really love to have you here, that will do it. I still think it's a pipe dream. I think he's not ending up here. He's not coming. But I'll spend a couple minutes just going, all right, let's just consider the what and the what if of this. If you are a Blazer fan who is holding out hope that Carmelo Anthony slash the Blazers could happen, could be something that happens, is this a basketball move that is good? Like, I know it's star powered. I know it's sexy. I know that it would bring some buzz and some excitement to the Blazers season. And maybe that's all we're looking for. But is it a on paper basketball move that makes sense to bring in a player that doesn't play defense, is not known for his defensive ability? He would immediately be the best offensive player the Blazers have. And also, he would need the ball in his hands. And I do think it neutralizes the other couple of players on this team that also are good offensive players that happen to need the ball in their hands. So how many balls do you have to go around? So that's the problem I'm having with it is, for a team that talks so much about culture, for a team that talks so much about building in the right direction, all that, it feels like a shortcut that isn't perfect. And I like my moves. Like, when it comes to a career move, I like my moves to be no-brainers. I got offered a job by another newspaper entity, a column job, recently. And I always go back to when I make those decisions, is it a no-brainer? Is it a no-brainer for my family? Is it a no-brainer with salary? Is it a no-brainer for the career element of it? Is it a no-brainer? I have to think that Paul Allen, the owner of the Blazers, and Neil Olshey, the general manager, are both sitting around going, all right, it's a sexy move. It's one we should probably make because, man, damn, it makes us more interesting. And yes, if you're giving up a bunch of baggage, if Myers Leonard and, you know, Aminu and some others are going away in this proposed deal that the Blazers are floating out trying to get Carmelo Anthony, if you're getting away spare parts and you're getting Carmelo in the wash, yeah, it's probably a move that you would make, but I'm just talking, you know, let's just look at the basketball element of this. Is it wise? It's not a no-brainer, I'll tell you that. And I have reservations on whether or not the team would have a locker room that would be divided pretty quickly. Because I think you've got Damian Lillard, like, as the promo you hear all day long, Damian Lillard is the man. Is he the man if you bring Carmelo into that equation? That's the part of it that I can't get past. Gliss, you're a Blazer fan. Let's just talk basketball, not the sexiness of it, not the fact that you'd go, oh, they got Carmelo, I'll watch this now. Is this a good basketball move?
I think it is because, I mean, let's face it, they're not going anywhere with the roster that they have right now. The, you know, all the other teams in the Western Conference that were in the playoff picture have improved, and they've done nothing except pretty much get rid of Allen Crabbe and, you know, get a few nice draft picks. But as a Blazer fan, I've never been a Carmelo Anthony fan, but I would definitely be in support of bringing him in, even if it were just for a year, because at least it makes them relevant and you get a fun season out of it.
You're not talking about basketball. You're talking about being relevant, well, being fun. And I think all those things are true. I agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that they would be a much better team with him on the team. Here's the thing. Yes, they aren't going to play any defense, but they don't play a lot of defense right now. So, I mean, at least they would score 140 points a night, potentially.
I want you to tweet at me, tell you whether or not you'd do the deal from a basketball perspective. Don't give me, I'd be more excited, I'd buy a Carmelo jersey. Don't give me, yes, he's a great offensive player. Because I think the way that this makes sense is if you're getting out of Myers Leonard's contract and you're getting out of Evan Turner's contract or somebody's big fat contract that you can't get out of, you'd rather be in Carmelo's contract. Because that is a tradable asset when the time comes. With these other guys, like Myers-Leonard's contract is virtually untradeable. So if they could get that done, I think they'd probably go out and do it. All right, I told you I taped with Gina Mizell of the Oregonian and Danny Moran of the Oregonian. We talked about all things Oregon State. I want you to hear that discussion. If you're a college football fan excited about this season, Gina Mizell and Danny Moran of the Oregonian are the experts who cover this team. And I asked him about Jake Luton, the quarterback situation. Now that the quarterback situation, guys, has been figured out, and that Oregon State has its starter, is everything just downhill from there?
Yeah, I mean, obviously last week in Bend, that's when Gary Anderson made the announcement that Jake Luton would be the starter. And of course, I guess the fallout or the follow-up to that was Marcus McMarion announcing that he was first going to leave Oregon State as a transfer, and then a couple days after that, decided he was going to go to Fresno State, which is, of course, near his hometown. Yeah. Jeff Tedford's the coach there. That seems like a good landing spot for him. But I think ever since Luton was named the starter, it's been more about just establishing that chemistry with the wide receivers. Noah Togiai is obviously back at tight end, and that's sort of where the offense stands at this point. Anything you want to add on that?
Yeah, I mean, the running backs are obviously, you know, solid. Ryan Nall, Thomas Tyner coming back, Artavis Pierce. So that's a huge stable there. I think the biggest key will be keeping Luton upright. Mm-hmm. He's not the mobile kind of guy that Daryl Garrettson or Marcus McMarion was, and so for him, he's got the arm. Finding those pieces, moving them together on the line is big, because right now it's only Blake Brandel at left tackle who's really established at this moment.
Is Derek Anderson a fair comparison for Jake Luton, or is that biting off too much?
Ooh, I mean, that's an interesting comparison. What I would say is that watching Jake Luton throw the football, I look back and say, I haven't seen anybody throw the ball like that since Sean Mannion was here, which obviously you're talking about the Pac-12's all-time leading passer, an NFL draft pick, all that. So I don't want to put that pressure on. But Derek Anderson, obviously an NFL quarterback as well. But he's more of that mold of what we saw under Mike Riley, that more pro-style quarterback. And that's part of how Oregon State doesn't want to completely transform their offense, but does want to install some of those air raid type qualities with hiring Jason Phillips as wide receivers coach.
Danny, you look at the backfield. How's Thomas Tyner fitting?
Pretty well. I mean, I think they've got a bevy of options. The other person I'll add to is Calvin Tyler, who's a freshman, mm-hmm. true freshman coming in from Texas, who's really impressed. And I mean, you think of all the depth that they have there. Gary Anderson said he's going to play. You know, I don't know how many carries he's getting. It may be a lot of special teams initially to start, but they've got even a fifth guy back there who,
really,
in addition to Tyner, I think will be.
Is that a problem? Is that a problem when you have that many guys that are good? I mean, is there a problem for there to be a locker room issue or? Yeah, like Tyner seemed to have the right attitude in the offseason. He knew Ryan Nall was the workhorse, and he was looking to be the complimentary guy. Is that still the case?
Yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, Thomas Tyner, from my perspective, has looked, I think, better than maybe I expected, just because he had been out of football for so long, and he looks pretty explosive. Now it's really tough to tell until we actually get into a real game situation how he will hold up health-wise and just how explosive he can be in this offense, but the one thing to keep in mind with this running back stable is, first of all, it's a position group that takes a lot of hits, so guys are going to get banged up in some capacity. And when you look at Ryan Nall, the one knock on his game so far has been his durability. He's missed a couple games each of his first two seasons, and so I'm actually working on a story about how they're trying to help his durability going into this season. But, of course, one of those things is that there's more depth behind him. This is the first time Telly Lockett, the running backs coach, said that he feels really, really good about the depth behind him. So that allows him to limit his practice reps in certain occasions. That will allow him to limit his game reps. And, of course, he wants to reach 1,000 yards. Gary Anderson pushed him to get that total last year. But if they can distribute those carries a little bit more and keep everybody fresh, I think that's good news for Oregon State's offense.
And I think it may help as far as that balance that these guys haven't won yet at the college level.
Yes. Yes.
Everyone talks about the bowl game. They talked even last year when it seemed pretty unrealistic about a bowl game. And for a guy like Nall, who, you know, maybe going pro, who knows, this could be their last shot.
We're with Danny Moran and Gina Mizell of the Oregonian. They cover Oregon State football. Gary Anderson's defense. I keep hearing he has scary guys that nobody's ever talked about. Let's talk about some of those guys. Does he have scary guys?
Ooh, Yeah, I mean, he's got some talent for sure. When you look at cornerback, a guy like Xavier Crawford, who was a freshman All-American last season. At linebacker, they've got Manasseh Hungalu and Bright Ugwebu, two guys who had breakout seasons last year and are expected to have big seasons again. And then the defensive line, I think, is still the biggest work in progress. That was a unit that struggled to stop the run, struggled to get pressure on the quarterback, but we're hearing really positive things about Titus Balegua, who was an outside linebacker last year, has moved back to defensive end. And then even some other guys like a Paisa Sevilla, who was a JC transfer last year. He's coming on in his second year in this system. And then someone like Kalani Vakamayalo, who plays defensive tackle, so he's one of those guys that doesn't get a ton of stats. But you can be really productive there. I mean, Kyle Pecco a couple seasons ago, when he finally became academically eligible, had a really nice season. And so those are some guys that I think have the potential to really be playmakers on this team. And then some other guys will have to step up in some other positions after losing Tristan Decoud and Devin Chappelle.
I love the names, that you're so good on the names.
I covered a team or something, right?
All these guys from American Samoa, right? Hawaii, every place. Yeah, no, they've stretched our vocabulary for sure.
Yes, we're learning.
Yeah, that defense of the coaching staff, I think, has been pretty, you know, blunt in their assessment of a lot of these guys. They got a lot of young, talented guys who... maybe it's just because at this point of camp and they're not satisfied, but you look at an Andre Hughes-Murray who's, you know, played last year outside linebackers, competing for inside starting job. He was a, you know, wrestler, undefeated wrestler as senior year in high school, and they still talk about how he doesn't have the strength, how he's not strong enough, how he needs to come along. So you hear that a lot, I think, from, you know, a number of these defensive coaches, that they're still really pushing a lot of these young guys to develop.
Yeah, absolutely.
The schedule, as it breaks down, I see a start that's very manageable. I see a finish that's very manageable. It's the middle of the schedule. What do you see when you look at the schedule?
I think that's a perfect assessment. I mean, you look at some of those early non-conference games. That game at Colorado State is going to be huge right out of the gate. First of all, Oregon State has not won a road game since October of 2014.
Wow.
So never in
I didn't remember that, yeah.
Yeah, it was against Colorado in the 2014 season. And so, first of all, that's a huge hurdle to get over. Second of all, that's the opening of Colorado State's brand new stadium. So it's going to be a sellout. They've officially announced that. So that's a huge game right out of the gate. The home game against Minnesota 2 weeks later. What is PJ Fleck's team going to look like? And then I look at that stretch in the middle that you denoted as so tough, and that Colorado game at home. Just what is that team going to look like? Of course, coming off a Pac-12 South title, but their defense is going to be completely revamped. Of course, Jim Leavitt, their coordinator's gone. They have, you know, the new starting quarterback and Steven Montez, who got some experience last year. But that might be a game that they have to win, because, yeah, in between, or like sandwiching that game, are at Washington State, Washington, at USC, Stanford. And then things do ease up in November, but can they survive that stretch and not be beat up physically, not be demoralized if they go on a big losing streak, something like that's going to be really key to watch.
And 2 points, even though the schedule does soften up, it'll be Arizona and Cal both on the road. So I think that's why winning on the road early is important, to at least have that, you know, in their mind. And then I think it's very possible they could be going to Eugene for the Civil War, playing for the chance to get back to a bowl game.
We're talking to Danny Moran of The Oregonian, Gina Mizell of The Oregonian. They cover Oregon State football. There's nobody else you should be reading or following on these teams. These guys are there at every practice. On that point, what is that like when you're at practice? What access are you getting? What does Coach Anderson like to cover? That's what Beaver fans want to know.
Yeah, well, I think we're lucky in that there's been a lot that's been said or written about across college football the past couple weeks about LSU completely shutting down reporter access to practice, or Notre Dame having all these stipulations, or Texas, or across the country. We are not able to see everything. We're allowed to see the last 20 minutes, which generally means we see some 11-on-11 work. And really the only restriction on us as far as what we can report, because we do daily practice reports every single day, is specifics about game planning and formations. But we are allowed to report on, you know, who's running with the first team. If you know, somebody gets injured on a play, we can ask about it after practice. We can use that context in our reporting. So, I mean, I'm thankful for that, just given the way that things have been, you know, consistently tightening up in college football across the country. And, I mean, as far as covering this team and Gary Anderson, it's been, for me at least, a very good working relationship since he arrived. I think he understands the media's role in this whole thing, and frankly, they're a program that's been down the last 2 years, and I think are trending up as far as the development of this program. But I think they trust us that we're going to tell good stories, and we're going to be honest and truthful and accurate. And so that's all that I want from my perspective. So I don't know if you have any.
Is there more, like, when you go to practice, Danny? Like, do you find there's more buzz around the program now than maybe a year ago when they were winless? He was looking around going, you know, are we going to win ever? Mm-hmm. you know?
I think there's an implicit sense that their comfort level, I mean, now, I mean, it's pretty much all their guys at this point. Or if it's a guy who came to, under Mike Riley's staff, he's earned his way. I mean, there have been a lot of guys that have departed for varying reasons. So I think implicitly there's definitely a comfort level that this is the best team that they've had since Anderson's been here. And as far as the buzz, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, when Ryan Nall talked last year before the season about reaching a bowl game, a lot of people, you know, in the media or maybe either in their eyes or, you know, just like, okay, you know, that now it's something that's believable. And now it's a storyline that when people talk about it on the team, it's something that sounds within reason.
Yeah, and people aren't shying away from it. Like, you ask any player on the team, and pretty much when you talk about broader goals, it's, I want to get back to a bowl game. I want to get back to a bowl game. Because even people who were on the team the last time they went to the Hawaii Bowl in 2013, like someone like Jordan Villeman was not academically eligible. And so he's like, I sat at home and watched that game instead of going to Hawaii. So there's a lot of motivation to get to that point.
He pretty much sat at home all last season, too. I mean, he wasn't very – he just wasn't – didn't feel to me like he was in the plan or with it. Who's going to catch passes? Where's their big play threat?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think they have some options for sure with Jordan Villeman. I know he wants to have a bounce back year and has really kind of looked inside himself to figure out how to do that. Seth Collins is, of course, back, and we didn't know if he would be able to play this season after being hospitalized with that illness at the end of last year, but he's moved to the slot.
Was that meningitis, or what was his...
That's never been officially reported, but you can kind of connect the dots on certain things, which we basically did in our reporting, but he looks pretty good. He looks pretty much back
to
his normal
self.
I'd say,
not 100%, he's looking close
to it. Exactly. And then Isaiah Hodgins, who is the true freshman, big-bodied guy, he's also going to start on the outside. And then I mentioned Noah Togiai as well, who was a tight end who hurt his knee in the second game of last season. He had 3 touchdowns in their most recent scrimmage and is, you know, a former basketball star and just has that great combination of you know, a big body and the athleticism to be a big weapon, too. Yeah. So there's some pieces there. It's just a matter of who's going to step up, because after Victor Bolden's departure, Seth Collins is their leading returning receiver, which, remember, he was playing quarterback 2 years ago. Yeah.
I think Togiai is the key.
Yeah.
I think
really?
His athleticism. Yeah, because, you know, losing him, he was their number one target against Minnesota when Darrell Harrison looked like he could be, you know, the starting quarterback for that team, except he kept getting sacked. But, you know, Togiai, I think, with his skill, with his athleticism and size, like Gina was alluding to, he's at least that safety valve in the middle of the field if the deep threat's not always there.
And I think they're the Beavers, if they can hold one thing up, like the backfield's loaded. They've got depth there. And at receiver, they're in a better position than Oregon is. Oregon's kind of looking around going, everybody kind of looks like the same player. Villeman's interesting because I think he could take a step forward. Hodgins is interesting because he's so young, but I think we're all looking at him going, like, could this guy end up as Oregon State's all-time leading receiver someday if he sticks around? And then you mentioned some other guys, but who's the backup quarterback now? Is
it's Garrettson
or in McMarion? Did that leave bad feelings, or did people kind of understand, hey, if I'm not starting, I'm out?
I mean, I wasn't surprised by the decision. Maybe I was surprised that the news broke on a Sunday morning, but it was pretty clear that after Jake Luton was named the starter, McMarion finished out that week in Bend. He was splitting the second team reps during their open scrimmage with Darrell Garrettson, and then they kind of came back. They were off that Saturday, and then Sunday was when the news popped, and that's when Kevin McGibbon, the offensive coordinator, said he had found out, too. It was, you know, on Sunday morning right before the news came out. So, I mean, I wasn't surprised, and that's sort of the nature of college football, right? I mean, we actually were talking with someone like a Jake Luton after practice that day that the news came out, and Jake Luton transferred out of Idaho to then go to community college to then come to Oregon State. Darrell Garrettson transferred out of Utah State to then come to Oregon State.
That's what they do.
So
it's
just kind of the nature of college football. And, I mean, you can't blame a guy for going somewhere to try to challenge for a starting job.
And I'll say, since I've been on the beat, which is now going into my third year, there hasn't been a more team-first guy than Marcus McMarion to have been in now his third competition, twice to not get named a starter, and then to bounce back, lead them, you know, in part to a Civil War win. From my sense, is he was pretty well respected in the locker room, and the fact that he graduated, it can now play right away.
Two years, not 1 year.
It makes sense for him.
Does it cause a problem? Can Luton lead the team? Are guys behind him, or is there a McMarion faction in that locker room still?
Oh, I'm sure there were people that were on Team McMarion, quote unquote, just because he was such a I know he was a well-liked guy in that locker room, and he was sort of the prototypical model student athlete in a lot of ways, as far as he performed and stepped in when he was called upon. He was the team's nominee for the Danny Werfel Award, which, you know, awards both on the field performance and community service. He was very involved, like, in their Beyond Football program, obviously graduated in 3 years, like you mentioned, Danny. So he was a guy that was well respected, and so I'm sure, you know, they're tough to see him go. A lot of teammates were tweeting at him and sending him well wishes, and that's your teammate. So you do wish Marcus McMarion the person well wishes. But as far as Jake Luton leading this team, I know he's taken steps in that direction, and if he can throw touchdown passes and lead them to wins, that I think that will solve any problem.
That's a good teammate. Yeah,
right, exactly.
That's our guy. All right, thank you.
All right, Jada Mizell, Danny Moran of the Oregonian. Great stuff there. I'll podcast that and post it wherever you may be listening. You've got the Bald Faced Truth Radio Network.
Something is about to happen.
BFT.
Now listen up, everyone.
Let's go.
The Bald Faced Truth.
John Canzano.
I gotta say, I love him most of the time. I think he's right on.
He's okay.
John's great.
He's a little unusual.
Live every afternoon, 12 to 3 p.m.
I hate that guy because he just never knows what he's talking about.
I think he does a damn good job.
That's my dude, man. Yeah, I know him, man. I let my mother listen to him.
Now, from the Pac West Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a Bald Faced Truth.
Las Vegas has pulled the odds on the Dallas Cowboys betting this season. You can bet on the Dallas Cowboys. At least you could have until yesterday. Dallas Cowboys running back Ezekiel Elliott is suspended 6 games by the NFL for violating the personal conduct policy. This came out today. It's been all over the news. You've probably heard about it. The suspension comes after an investigation that started more than a year ago after an ex-girlfriend accused Elliott of domestic violence in Columbus. The Columbus City Attorney's Office announced in September that it would not pursue charges against Elliott because of conflicting and inconsistent information. But the NFL reserves the right to penalize a player even without legal charges. This is what we're going to kick around today as part of the BFT jury. The NFL, which has largely been complicit in a league that does not take care of women, does not protect women, can't even inflate the footballs properly, is suddenly now erring on the side of, A, there was an allegation, we've launched our own investigation, even though there's no criminal charges, we're going to sit the guy down. Now, Elliott, of course, has 3 days to file an appeal, and I'm told he is appealing this. And they will have a hearing within 10 days. But according to Article 46 of the Collective Bargaining Agreement, Commissioner Roger Goodell would hear the appeal. So then his ruling would be binding. So the commissioner has the ability to enact the suspension. It's also the Players Association in a statement said it's reviewing the league's decision. It's been in contact with Elliott. And this is going to be something that is going to be kicked around over the next couple of weeks. Do you like what the NFL did here? Do you think it's a dangerous precedent, or do you think it was much needed? I want you to call in right now if you've got an opinion or a thought on Ezekiel Elliott being sat down for 6 games by the NFL. And you could even call in if you're a Cowboys fan and you're just mad about the football part of this, because that's being real. Just be real with me. I have really mixed feelings about this one. I'm divided. The phone number is 503-417-7575. Tell me if you think the NFL is making a good move, a prudent move, by punishing a player that is not going to face legal repercussions. It is the subject of the BFT jury.
Spanning the city in search of sports fans willing to explore the constant variety of sports and opinion. These sports freaks are prepared to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the bald-faced truth.
He's asking you if you swear to tell the truth.
This isn't 12 angry men stuck in a jury room. It's Boulder.
Kindly address this court as your honor.
Welcome to the Bald-Faced Truth Jury.
You're in the deliberation room, so if you're listening to this, wherever you may be across the great state of Oregon, Dallas Cowboys running back Ezekiel Elliott suspended 6 games. The district attorney's office in Columbus says it will not pursue charges, but the NFL has said it's moving forward with this. Vegas upset with it, taking the Dallas Cowboys off the board. Where do you stand on this? Is this a dangerous, slippery slope for a sports entity or a private business to get involved in? hey, you weren't charged with a DUI, but we're going to sit you down anyway as an employee because, you know, we've got our own conduct policy. It's a tough one and a tricky one for me because it comes loaded with a lot of tentacles. On one hand, you have a league that has been poor with defending and protecting women. Just a poor performance by the NFL over the years. It took players like Greg Hardy. It's got players in the league that have had numerous domestic violence incidents that it stands behind. And yet, when it comes to the case of Ezekiel Elliott, he's high profile, he's with the Dallas Cowboys, and is the timing here just not right for Zeke? Elliott said in a statement, quote, the NFL's findings are replete with factual inaccuracies and erroneous conclusion, and it cherry-picks so-called evidence to support its conclusion while ignoring other critical evidence. That comes from his attorneys. But what say you? 503-417-7575. Let's go out to Tony in Portland. Tony, you get the first crack.
Whether we agree with the decision or not, the Players Association agreed to have the commissioner not only decide any misconduct, but also to hear the appeal. So the players agreed to this, not once, but twice. So if they don't like it, then they could wait for the new CBA and take some of those powers away.
Yeah, it's such a weird thing to have the commissioner. Thanks, Tony, for that. To have the commissioner of the NFL not only be judge and jury, but also serve as the appellate court. It's just, it's bizarre. It's a lot like my household, where I'll say to one of the kids, you know, you're in trouble for this, but you can appeal it. I will hear the appeal. See how far that gets you. That opens a line, 503-417-7575. Let's go to Scott. Scott on 217. Scott, what do you say?
Hey, John. Long-time listener, man. I just want to say I'm on I-5 now, so the traffic's moving pretty slowly. But to your last caller, I never thought about that aspect of it. That's pretty crazy. I'm a union guy, and I get sometimes frustrated with my union's decisions. But like he said, you know, it's up to the members to make the decision as to what we can give them power to do. But nor am I a Dallas Cowboys fan, and I want to say that, you know, I don't stand for abuse against women and all that stuff. But it really sounds like he's getting nailed for something that is not even proven yet, and it's kind of like you said, a slippery slope. Because who's making, I mean, it's up to Roger Goodell now to be the judge and jury and appeals jury and judge, and all, that's crazy.
Yeah, and it's, to me, it's a little bit alarming. Like, you want to check and balance there. And I agree with the caller. Like, I don't think anybody anywhere could come on and say, look, it doesn't matter if you are abusive towards a woman. Like, nobody's going to make a domestic violence apology, I don't think, on this show. I'm not going to allow it. But you look at the NFL's domestic violence allegations from February 2016 to July 2016. And they're looking at Elliott and they're going, there was a St. Patrick's Day incident in March where he pulled down a woman's shirt. And they're saying that didn't factor in it, but they said he used poor judgment and questionable behavior. And that's not why. But I have to think that, you know, you've got Randy Gregory, a defensive end, who's suspended for the season for substance abuse. You've got David Irving, a defensive end, who's suspended for the first four games for the Cowboys season for violating the performance-enhancing drug policy. And you got people around the Cowboys who are going, man, we're going to have to turn to Darren McFadden and Rod Smith and Alfred Morris. And they signed Ronnie Hillman at the end of July. But that's not Ezekiel Elliott. I go to a position where I was picking the Cowboys to maybe be the Super Bowl winner to now going, do they have their house in order? And forgive me, but it feels a little bit like last season it was the Patriots and this season it's the Cowboys. And will the Cowboys respond the same way the Patriots did? Will they lock in, bear down? Will they focus or will they go to pieces? I don't know that they have the culture that the Patriots have. Of course they don't. Sam's in Portland, 503-417-7575. Sam, what do you think?
I am actually in agreement with Roger Goodell on this one. I think that they, and a lot of what we were, or what you were just talking about like they're showing a pattern of bad decision making. And I feel that this was kind of a wake up call to the NFL of saying we've got to rein these guys in, or there are going to be major, major penalties that are going to be paid. The only problem that I'm seeing on this is the NFL has stood against domestic violence, but yet there hasn't necessarily been the same punishment for off field, like let's just say like an altercation at a club or anything along those lines. And I feel that for whatever reason, they're putting themselves in a position now to where there's an extreme danger of these players being extorted by women who come up with false claims of abuse. So I think there has to be some kind of happy medium involved where it's like there needs to be a court proceeding that follow or that is in junction with the NFL. I just don't believe that Roger Goodell is going to be able to go across the board and rule this way.
Yeah, it's tough because I feel like a bad person because, you know, I was outraged at Ray Rice's initial two-game suspension. Remember that? The NFL, for a long time, did not take violence against women seriously. And now they are, like, to a hyper extent, in a case where, you know, this is a woman who made an allegation about being pushed in a parking lot. The police have interviewed witnesses in the parking lot who say they did not see what the woman said happened. There's a lot of photographic evidence, expert analysis, everything's gone into it. I feel like a bad person because I'm sitting back picking apart the same thing I criticized the NFL for. I'm torn. I don't really know what happened. And the investigation and the punishment have now gone outside of the legal system into the NFL. And that's where my discomfort with the whole thing is. It always is. Like, anybody out there who is an advocate for survivors and victims of domestic violence has to be happy with the firm stance that the NFL is taking. Has to give her the benefit of the doubt. But on the other hand, it does feel heavy-handed. And I'm looking at the NFL going, it's the inconsistency that I'm having a hard time with. Like Ray Rice should have had six games plus whatever. And now they're getting it right, kind of, but not really. I don't know if this is justice or not. You tell me. 503-417-7575. Fred's in Portland. Go ahead, Fred.
Hey, the one question I would have is how much influence would somebody in the NFL have over witnesses that back away and then the police can't pursue a case? I know in the bar fight that Ezekiel got in, all of a sudden the guy that got his nose broke had nothing to say about it.
Yeah.
And I would wonder how much if Roger Goodell takes the overall into, you know, looking at it all.
Cases like Greg Hardy. In Greg Hardy's case, the charges against him were dismissed after the accuser failed to appear at his trial. So there is a need for justice outside the judicial system. It is true. And that caller raises a great point. Let's say you're an NBA player. And let's say you're in a bar fight and you throw a guy through a window. And that guy says, I want him arrested. And, of course, you're arrested and you're charged with an assault. And then in the course of proceeding towards that assault conviction, cooler heads prevail. And what I mean by that is your attorney reaches out to his people and says, what do you guys want? And they say, well, we're going to sue you civilly unless you settle with us. And we'll have a nondisclosure and I want $50,000. And that happens. And there is some money that changes hands. And like in Greg Hardy's case, the charges against him were dismissed. His accuser failed to appear at trial. So there is, and look, let's face it. What is a trial when there is a woman involved in domestic violence? It's not a trial just of the player. It's a trial of her character. And that's part of what's wrong with our system, is what immediately happens. In any case where a woman says that she was sexually assaulted or violated, it, what happens is you can't help it. The public does this. You put her on trial first. Is she credible? Is she making it up? Was she asking for it? All those horrible things. So she gets her name dragged through the mud. She gets to be in a public court proceeding. There's a celebrity involved. Everybody's looking up her on her Facebook page to see what she's about. And, oh, look at her. It's human nature. You want to know what she looks like. When I did the story on Brenda Tracy, who had been gang raped by four men, it's interesting to me. I was on Twitter this morning, and I saw Brenda was tweeting about the Pac-12's decision to implement some preventative measures when it comes to violence against women and transfers, and she was tweeting about it. And there's this guy from Baylor, who's a Baylor fan, who's saying, oh, you're just in it for the money. And I want to grab him by the neck on Twitter, and I want to be like, yo, dude, she sat for 16 years in silence after being gang raped by four men who admitted they raped her. There were never charges filed because the district attorney's office in Benton County let her down. The police let her down. The university at Oregon State University let her down. Everybody let her down. Her friends betrayed her. People around her betrayed her. Her boyfriend betrayed her. Everybody told her to let it go. So she did. And guess what? 16 years later, after putting herself through school, getting an MBA, becoming a nurse, it's being like uber successful and realizing 16 years later she's still not healed. She meets me in the coffee shop at the PacWest Center here in this building and pours her heart out saying, I was raped and here's my police report, which she hadn't read in years. And I read through it and went, do you know they admitted they raped you? She'd forgotten. They had made admissions to each other, to the police, to the district attorney. They should have been in prison. So now she's on a crusade to get all the rape kits in the state of Oregon tested, to change laws, to expand the statute of limitations, and by the way, to tour around the country and talk to athletes at Baylor and talk to athletes at Oklahoma and talk to athletes at Oregon and Oregon State. And she won't shut up. She will not shut up, and it makes some of you uncomfortable, very few of you, but some of you uncomfortable, like the guy on Twitter that I wanted to grab around the neck today. And he says she's just in it for the money. She made $200,000 in the last year touring around talking on campuses. She should be paid for her time giving up her job as an RN to go around the country and talk about this. She should get a speaker's fee to appear on college campuses and talk to students. It pisses me off when you have especially men who are hiding behind the handle Baylor fan, whatever, on Twitter, going, you're just in it for the money. I got a question for that guy. What are you in it for? What are you in it for? The glory of Baylor football? See, that's the kind of stuff that ticks me off. And when it comes to Ezekiel Elliott, it's why I feel like a bad person, because I sat with Brenda Tracy. I've sat with other survivors of assault and domestic violence, and I so badly want to defend those people. And I had women who came forward after the Brenda Tracy story and said, I was raped too, and here's what happened. And I also was raped, and here's what happened. And I met with them one by one in the lobby of the PacWest Center, and some of them had no evidence, some of them had no corroboration, some of them did not have the assailants admitting to investigators that they conducted a rape. And I had to tell those people, and this is the hardest thing I've had to do. There was a girl who was a 18-year-old girl who went to Western University here in the state of Oregon, who I believe was raped by a football player. She told me the story. She shared with me the notes. And the fact of the matter is, it was a he said, he said situation. The kid transferred schools. She was left still wondering, where does she go with her life? And I had to tell her, I can't write this story. I don't have enough to accuse this guy of rape. But do I believe in my heart for a second that this woman who was sitting in front of me in the lobby had been raped? Absolutely. I think she had been violated. She had been dismissed. And worst of all, she was left wondering, does anybody care? So for me, like, when this Ezekiel Elliott thing comes out, I'm happy that the NFL is taking this stuff seriously. But it kind of feels to me like the NFL, it's a little too late. And where's the consistency? I like them to be in this, not because it's for show, but because it's really what they're about. And that's where I stand on the issue of Ezekiel Elliott. Like, yeah, I think Roger Goodell is going to uphold that suspension. I think he's going to deny the appeal. But I want him to have that consistency of advocating on behalf of women. And I want to see it throughout the process. And I do believe that it's within the NFL's right. They're a business. They should have working for them who they want to represent them. This radio station and the radio station you're listening to does that. Who do we want to be about? What do we want to be about? Stop sitting back. If you're a person out there who is sitting back saying, well, I just work here. No, it's what do you want to be about as a person, as a family, as an individual? Who do you associate with? Who do you surround yourself with? And I think the NFL is saying, and they're using Ezekiel Elliott as an example, but I think the NFL is saying, we don't want to be about that. We don't want that cloud. And this is the guy we're picking to make the statement. Leave it here. I'll make you laugh next. I'm in studio. I got Steve Trevino, comedian. He will be at Helium Comedy Club tonight, 7:30 and 10. Tomorrow night, 7:30 and 10. You can get tickets at heliumcomedy.com. We were talking about swim lessons during the break. Yeah.
Me and John hate the same people. It's great. It's great.
And he's a sports fan, so this will be good radio here. So what's that like? You got a call. Was that your wife that called during the break?
Yeah, my wife called because she was on her way to swim lessons with our 21-month-old, which, by the way, yeah. We wanted a boy, right? Yeah. Had a boy. And then now my wife's like, oh, we need a daughter. And I'm like, no, we don't. Like, I can't imagine my wife having a backup bitch. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like a little mini her following her around the house, you know? You're right, he is. He does do nothing. You know what I mean? I don't need that.
I have all girls.
Oh, so dude, you did something bad.
Yeah, and I know I did. And I look around and I go, man, I'm in charge of nothing anymore.
Yeah, you're done.
Concierge, that's what I am.
Dude, you are the load the car. Load the car, we're going to the river.
What's that like to be on tour and then, like, I assume, like, you're coming from another city, your wife's calling just to check in, be like, hey, where are you today?
But we travel a lot together, me and my wife and my baby, so this is just one of those cities that she didn't choose to come to, you know? Mm-hmm. But she'll be with me in San Diego next week. I mean, look, man, at the end of the day, I want to be with my wife and kid, even though my whole act is making fun of my wife because I hate her. Does that make any sense? Like, I love her, but my God.
Right.
You know what I mean? What kind of animal squeezes the toothpaste from the middle?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Out of control.
Yeah.
Didn't know what you were getting into.
Yeah.
So can she see the act without being offended, or do you have to kind of...
No, she doesn't get offended. I mean, she watches the whole show. I mean, people ask me that all the time, right? They're like, oh, my God, you know, you crap on your wife for literally an hour. How does she feel about it? I go, well, it buys Louis Vuittons. So as long as it's paying the bills. Well, and, dude, to be honest with you, man, I don't know if you've seen my set or not, but she's become such a character that I have these women that are like Team Captain Evil. You know, because I do a joke about calling her Captain Evil and that she's like a messed up superhero. If I'm ever having too much fun, she will show up, right? Like a Captain Evil, you know. So I talk about her. So I have all these fans that are like, we're Team Captain Evil. And if my wife is at the show, they want to take pictures with her and not me.
Yeah, because she's the star.
She's the star of the show. So, you know, that's kind of cool, right? She's very excited that football season has started.
Yeah.
She hates it so much.
She lures you to the TV.
Oh, dude, I love it, right? Yeah. I love...
Because you're from Texas.
Yeah, I'm from Texas. I actually played high school football against Drew Brees.
Yeah.
I played against LaDainian Tomlinson. I played against Dat Fan, who a lot of people... I mean, Dat Wynn.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't know who Dat Wynn is.
Yeah.
In high school, he was they were next door neighbors. He grew up in Rockport, Texas, and... I grew up in Gregory, Portland, Texas. As a matter of fact, Drew Brees' grandfather was my high school football coach.
Wow.
Yeah, Coach Aikens.
Texas football.
It's nuts, dude.
That's like the stadiums. Anybody who's been in Texas during high school football
season.
Look,
if you ever want to go looting, wait till Friday night. Like Friday night, just go through Texas towns and pretty much everybody leaves their door open.
Yeah.
And you can be, I mean, nobody's home.
What is that about, though? Is there nothing going on or why is it so big?
I don't know. I mean, it was just it's just in our blood. It was culture, you know, and it was funny because I remember in elementary school, they wouldn't let us play football because we would. They don't want us tackling, right, in recess.
Yeah.
So we would just pick up the soccer ball. And we just played football with the soccer ball because it was just what you did. And you grew up wanting to play ball. You just played. I mean, that's what you did. I mean, it's ingrained in your blood. You know what I mean?
Yep. The guest in studio, Steve Trevino, you Mexican-American. I grew up. Yeah. All my friends were Hispanic. We had menudo on Sunday, homemade tortillas.
Damn right.
Was that the kind of culture you were in growing up?
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's dying off. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like my grandmother died, and now it's like, hey, mom, make tortillas. And she's like, oh, maybe next time when you come. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's kind of, we've been enough generations have gone by. But when my grandma was around, it was always the menudo and the tamales and, you know.
Hard to find here.
And now, you know, I kill a pig every year and then I make my mom make tamales.
Yeah.
Right? Because, you know, I hunt and I fish. And so I'll kill a pig and I'll be like, mom. Tamales. And she's like, oh, great. Right. Yeah. So then all the aunts come over and they make tamales. And then all my white buddies are like, hey, I'll bring a pig over.
That's
will she
right.
make some for me?
Yeah,
you know?
That's right. That's how
but
it works.
It's how I grew up. You know, I get very frustrated because, you know, George Lopez is pretty much our representative.
Right.
And he's horrible. He's everything I don't want to be.
Yeah.
You know, you come to my show, man. My show is, you know, very universal. It's very relatable. It's me, my wife, my kid. Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, somebody like George Lopez, you know, punchlines are in Spanish. You know, he speaks for us.
Right.
You know, we're not going to vote for you. You know, and it's like, well, who are you to speak for me? You know what I mean? So I'm trying to show America that, hey, there's Mexican Americans out there that put America first. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I'm not one of these fly the Mexican flag, like root for Mexico and the World Cup. No, I root for the United States of America.
Yeah.
My father served in the Vietnam War. So that's kind of, you know, when it comes to being Mexican American, I'm proud of my culture.
Yeah.
But this is my home.
Is it hard?
No.
Was it hard in this last election to be Mexican American? Because people were going, looking at you like, are you for the wall or against? Like, you would have a different opinion.
Oh, yeah, I would
like,
get that all
you
the time,
I mean?
Right? Like, people would come up to me like, well, you're Mexican. You should be against the wall. I'm like, no, dude, I'm American.
Yeah.
I'm for the wall. You know, and it's not that I don't like immigrants. I love immigrants. I just think that we are at capacity.
Yeah.
You know, only so many people can live at my house before there's no more room.
There's going to be more people at your house. Your wife has her way.
Yeah, believe me.
We got Steve Trevino in studio, heliumcomedy.com.
By the way, this is Portland. Somebody's offended.
Well, yeah, of course.
Somebody's going to send
how it works.
A message.
You can't worry. You can't, sit around and worry about, is everybody buying what I am selling?
Well, and I don't do politics on stage. You know what I mean? I stay away from politics. I stay away from religion. I mean, I literally talk about my life and what's happening in my life at the moment. And that's what it is. I think, I mean, look, if you're married, my show's the show for you.
Yeah.
Because I say all the things that you wish you couldn't. But I'm a grown man. I mean, if you have a man bun, don't come to my show. You know what I mean? If you can share your jeans with your wife, don't come to my show. As a matter of fact, if you're in your car right now and you're in the left lane and people in the right lane are passing you, first kill yourself and then don't come to my show.
Steve Trevino in studio. So when you're you must be looking always for material. Like
always, life everywhere. And what's cool is sometimes people come up to me after my show and they'll go, oh, my wife does this. And I'm like, oh, that's funny. Like, I need to add that.
Yeah.
To, you know, because my wife does do things, but then it's also fabricated, right? And there's all these things that I add on to it that happen. So, yeah, I'm always looking for material. I mean, there's, you know, and we hang out with other couples, so I'm always studying them.
Yeah.
And sometimes they'll do something, and then they'll all just look at me like oh,
did you get that?
Yeah.
Like, did you
that's
get that
going
right?
on stage for sure, right?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, it's, you know, for me, it's life and it's telling stories and, you know, I mean, even when I walk on stage, I go, look, this isn't your typical comedy show. I don't have a notebook.
Yeah.
You're not going to, there's no funny haikus, right? I don't have a blazer.
No haikus?
Yeah. You know, this is my life. And here's things that have happened to me and my wife. You know, like I tell people, I go, like, one of the things I'm doing right now is my frustration with, you know, my wife says, you know, she's perfect. Right. She does no wrong.
Right.
But this is the same woman that every day walks around our house going, call my phone. Can you call my phone?
Yes.
I don't know where my phone is.
Yes.
Oh, it's in my purse. Ha ha.
Yeah.
I had it on silent. Like, are you kidding me right now? Can you help me find my keys? Son of a. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
But it's little simple things like that I do on stage. And I love to watch wives hit their husbands or husbands hit their wives, and they're nudging each other going, oh my God, you do that, or I, you know what I mean? So
where does this come from? Because I think, like, you did you grow up in a big family, or how did you learn how to tell stories?
You know, I don't know. I mean, look, I come from a very funny family, and then my dad is not very funny. You know what I mean? My dad's kind of the hard ass. Yeah. Like, my nieces said it perfectly. We were at Schlitterbahn near my house, which is a huge water park, with my dad, and my dad rode every ride.
Yeah.
And my niece goes, Grandpa Joe, he loved it, but he didn't smile once. That's the kind of dude he is. You know, he just doesn't smile. So I think the combination of having a funny family and having this dad that was like, shut up, you're embarrassing me, kind of created the comedy gene, right, or whatever. But
your first Showtime thing, was it all about Grandpa Joe?
A lot of it was you know, talking about growing up and how I was raised and how when I was growing. And which is funny because, you know, when I do stand up, it is just, hey, this is my life. Yeah. Not specifically, you know, being Mexican-American, this is my life. And it's funny because I have all these different cultures come up to me and go, I grew up that way.
Yeah.
Well, of course you did, right? Because I do a joke about having a, you know, how when we were growing up, we'd go outside and our parents would lock us outside.
Yeah.
Literally.
Stay out.
Right.
Yeah.
You'd knock on the door and your mom would look through the window like, what do you want? Well, I'm thirsty. Is there something wrong with the water hose?
Yeah.
Dude, we drank out of the water hose. Yeah. And you let the dumb kid go first because that water's hot.
Yeah.
Remember that that water that was stuck in the hose?
Yeah, the hose. And there was a certain taste to the different hoses.
Oh, it tasted like cancer and AIDS at the same time. Just filth. But we didn't care. You know, my dad would drop me off at the swimming pool with no shoes, no towel, because they're going to steal them.
Right.
And you'd be there in the hot pavement waiting to get in. And they didn't care, you know, with a bag of quarters. Remember that?
Yeah.
Hey, here's 6 quarters. Go to the convenience store.
Yeah.
That's how we grew up, man. We grew up riding our bikes.
Yep.
You know, if we had to be a mechanic to keep it going.
Yeah.
Sometimes you'd be pedaling and nothing would happen. You're like, oh, my chain came off.
Right.
Right? So what would you do? You'd flip it over, fix the bike.
Yeah. I do that now. Yeah. We just went on vacation and I fixed all the bikes. And my daughter, 14-year-old daughter, was like, how do you know how to do that? I said, because if we didn't do that, we didn't have a bike to ride.
Right.
You know,
and nowadays, if a chain comes off a kid's bike, they're on their cell phone. Yeah. Mom, I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
I checked for an app. I don't have one. Come pick me up. Yes, I can see the house from here. Steve. Thank God I had my helmet on. Like, dude, you're a little bitch. Dude, you're wearing a helmet. There was one kid in my neighborhood who wore a helmet. Nobody talked to his ass.
Yeah.
Remember that kid?
Yeah.
Couldn't leave the driveway?
Yeah.
Like, hey, come play with us. I can't. My parents are from the future.
And you could have a bad accident. Like, you could go head over handlebars. But that's how learned when you're going. You don't put your foot down on the front tire.
Ate it.
Yeah.
You know, we'd put a ramp in the middle of the street with a piece of the fence and a rock. And our parents would watch us. They wouldn't tell us to stop. They'd be like, oh, this is going to be good.
Yeah.
That's how I broke a pedal off.
It was like Jackass.
And again, I had a one-pedal bike, and because we were raised lucky, right? Our parents would say, you're lucky.
Right.
You're lucky to have that bike. You know, nowadays, kids are raised deserve. Oh, you deserve it.
Yeah.
Like, teachers, if you're listening, I feel sorry for you. Kids come home, oh, the teacher doesn't like me, and the parents run. Right? And, oh, how dare you not like my kid and blah, blah, blah. When I was a kid, I was like, Dad, teacher doesn't like me. My dad was like, son, I don't like you. Now go back to school, and if I have to leave work, we're going to have some problems.
Steve Trevino.
You know, old school.
Steve Trevino, comedian. He'll be at Helium Comedy Club tonight. Get a ticket, 7:30 and 10 tonight and tomorrow night. We talk sports on the commercial break, but are you a Cowboys fan or what's your, you're from Texas?
Well, you know, I've lived in LA for probably 12 years. So living in LA, I just started rooting for anybody Texas.
Yeah.
I am a Cowboys fan, but you know, I really root for the Texans now.
Yeah.
You know, but I am a Cowboys fan and what happened to Ezekiel is like really 6 games.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. But the kicker from the Giants last year, 1 game.
That's what gets me. It's the inconsistency of it. Like,
well, when the person from the NFL is a Giants fan, who do they hate? The Cowboys, right? I mean, come on.
Everybody hates the Cowboys.
Everybody hates. It's like in the Yankees. You know what I mean? If you like the Yankees, like, loser. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, look, I hate Jerry Jones.
Right.
I can't wait for that man to die. He has ruined that franchise. He has ruined that franchise. He will continue to ruin that franchise. And he wants Super Bowls today.
Yeah.
Instead of building a team. There's a reason that Bill Belichick competes every single year for a Super Bowl. It's not because of the stars. It's because he knows how to create a team.
Yeah, that's what I worry about with Ezekiel going out for six games. If it were the like the Patriots were galvanized by Deflategate and they were on a mission. The Cowboys with this, I don't feel like they'll bond together because there's no culture there.
But there's also, there's no culture, and then there's also a sophomore slump. You know, I think that these guys are going to come in and they're going to have a hard time this year, harder than they did last. Because when you're a rookie, you're going, oh, well, this is easy, and this is what I do, and I got this. Yeah. And then things get heady, right? You start thinking there's a little, I think there's going to be a sophomore slump. And I am a Cowboys fan. I like to see them do well, but I think they're in trouble. You know, and you look at the Texans, and the Texans are consistently getting better because their coach comes from the Bill Belichick world. You know, and they're consistently getting better. I mean, last year they competed, and they went through how many quarterbacks?
Yeah, didn't matter.
You know, didn't matter. They competed.
Put you at quarterback, you'd be fine.
Well, I don't know about that. I'm 5'5". We might have some problems.
But. The Raiders going to Vegas.
I love that, by the way.
Talk about that.
Dude, I love the okay, first of all, California – you're the L.A. Chargers, you're the L.A. Rams, you're the San Francisco 49ers. You have four teams in your state?
Yeah.
And let's be honest, people root for the Niners, and that's it.
Yeah.
And then you have all these Raider Nation guys, right, that are in California, but they're all over the country. I think the best move that the Raiders could have ever did was go to another city because they'll get all of Las Vegas behind them. And guys like me and you who are in Vegas who want to go catch a game.
Go see a game.
We'd pay top dollar. To go watch a game.
I go watch Carrot Top in Vegas. I'll go see the Raiders.
Give me an excuse to go to Vegas and watch my team.
Yeah.
Right? If I can go see the Cowboys and the Raiders in Vegas, I'm there.
Yeah. We were in a cab, and my wife was looking at the billboards, and she's like, there's a lot of bad acts that have lasted a long time there.
Oh, yeah, because
like, the
Vegas.
Raiders will be fine. Right? You know what I mean?
Right.
They'll be okay.
But look, Al Davis was just like Jerry Jones.
Yeah.
You know, he had this, you know, God complex where he had to run the team and he had to do it his way. And he ruined the team. Get a real general manager. Get somebody in there that's going to let these coaches coach. I mean, when you lose people like Parcells, Parcells leaves because he says, look, you're not letting me do my job. There's a problem. And Garrett's not going to go anywhere. Why is Garrett going to go anywhere? He's got it made. He's the coach of the Dallas Cowboys. And as long as he does what Jerry Jones tells him to do, he'll continue to have a job.
He's got a job. Will the NFL work in L.A.? I mean, your friends and neighbors in Hollywood?
No, none of them.
Yeah.
Dude, they're out brunching. I'm like, what are you doing brunching? There's games on.
Yeah.
And you're at brunch, guy? It's not going to work. There's no way. And you're going to have to choose between the Chargers and the L.A. Rams. They're in trouble.
Yeah.
The L.A. Rams, they screwed up, right?
Yeah.
And nobody wants to go to San Antonio because what are you going to compete with the Cowboys?
Yeah.
You know, fan base-wise, San Antonio, good luck.
We take that team here in a heartbeat. Like the Blazers being the only show in town, people here were starving for something else.
That, see, give a city something to root for. L.A., number one, they don't care. Number two, there's no stadium. And number three, you have two teams there now.
Yeah.
Look what happened to the Oakland Raiders.
Yeah, you go from zero to two.
Get out of here.
How much of your act is, you mentioned just talking about your family, your own experiences. Will you take anything you get in Portland, like you're walking around today, you saw this, does that find its way into the act?
Sometimes, you know, I was telling the manager today that I find Portland so interesting because it's very polarized, right? I see these men that are like working men, right? Wearing boots and they're dirty and they're in the 7-Eleven. And behind them is this skinny, pale, white kid with a man bun and cut-off jean shorts. Yeah. You know what I mean? So there's like there's no like normal people.
Right.
Right?
It's no either, in between. Yeah.
There's no in between. It's either these hipster hippies or these really hardworking dudes, you know? Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe that might go on the app. But I find it very interesting that there's this polarization here of... like hippie, it's like Austin. Austin, Texas is a lot like that, right? Like
Austin's a good town, though. Like
great
town. You go in there and you're playing in Austin. That's a good college town, right?
Oh, I mean, huge, man! UT's the show in Austin. I mean, you know, that's the biggest tailgate I've ever been to, is a UT tailgate.
Yeah,
they're the biggest. I mean, it's huge. And I've been to games all over the country because of what I do for a living. You know, best fans in the NFL. I'll tell you right now, Steelers.
Yeah.
Best stadium to watch a game at is Kansas City. That's the loudest.
Arrowhead Stadium.
Arrowhead is an amazing place to watch a game. The energy is amazing. Levi Stadium is horrible.
Yeah, been there.
Horrible. It's hot. It's annoying.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just not a good stadium. It's ghetto.
Yeah.
You know, but the Steelers, I saw a game there, and that was amazing. But it wasn't as amazing as watching a game in Kansas City. But the best fans of the NFL are the Steelers. I mean, I travel the country every single year, all over the country, and there are Steelers fans everywhere.
That city reminds me
and
of
they're
Portland.
Geared out.
Yeah.
They're in gear.
They're into it.
Yeah.
I think that they got hooked, though, in the 70s. They had all that success
with
those teams.
Bradshaw.
Yeah. And that it was like their childhood and their grandpa taught them this, and
right.
It's the values. It's not like you're a fan. It's like it's in you. You don't have
well,
a choice.
That, what's cool is the town affects the way that the team reacts, which I think is really cool, right? Like if somebody tries to get too much money, the town gets upset with them because
yeah.
they're not playing for the team.
Yeah.
And that's really cool to me that, you know, and I think Green Bay's like that, right?
Yeah.
I've never been to Green Bay, but
yeah.
I think Green Bay's kind of like, hey, dude, don't screw our team up because you're greedy.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's a really cool culture. And the Cowboys are the exact opposite?
Yeah, because the owner's yeah. buying everything. All right,
yeah,
he is at Helium Comedy Club. It's tonight, tomorrow night, 7:30 and 10, two performances each night. You grab tickets. I'm telling you, grab them quick.
Hold
on,
real quick.
Yeah.
What's my first draft? Who do I draft first?
Go with the running back.
Wait, right. I'm aware of that.
I like Devontae Freeman with the Falcons.
Dude, Freeman or the kid from the Bears is, what's
yeah.
his name? I just saw him last night, and he killed it. Stay away from Ezekiel,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, you're going to lose six games.
And yeah, six games, you're in trouble. Yeah.
All right, see him tonight, 7:30 and 10. Tomorrow night, 7:30 and 10, heliumcomedy.com. Leave it right here.
I want you all to listen up. This is important stuff, all right?
Okay. Here we go.
The bald-faced truth.
Call 503-417-7575 or 877-733-0750 or text to 64636.
Here we go in 3, 2.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Knicks and Rockets have re-engaged in trade talks involving 10-time All-Star Carmelo Anthony. It's like a reality television show. He remains steadfast that he only plans to waive the clause for the Rockets, and he refuses to expand his list to include more possible destinations. Meaning Carmelo, who by all accounts is a good dad, likes being around his kid, is only leaving that situation for a place where he really wants to be, which is the Houston Rockets. Knicks, it's your move. Will they make that move? Will they acquiesce? Will they make him happy? My favorite Carmelo story. He was in Athens for the 2004 Olympics. It was not a good USA basketball team. I don't know if you remember what happened in Athens in 2004, but my deal was I was over at the swim complex during the Olympics. And I plan to cover basketball during the 2004 Olympics, but I'm over at the swim complex and my phone starts blowing up. And it's the editor at the Oregonian who's telling me, you need to get over to basketball. And I wasn't alone because for people who have never been to Olympics, there is a transportation system for the Olympics that it's a lot like if you designed a small city, which an Olympic Village is a small city. And you said, all right, here's the basketball venue, here's the pool, here's where we're going to do ping pong, you'd put all these things on a loop. And then you'd have buses that just run within the loop. So basically, once you go through security, you are through security, you're into the venues, you can travel from destination to destination without having to go back through security. It's like being on the inside of the airport. You don't have to go back through security to use the Starbucks at the airport. You don't have to go back through security if you want to use the bathroom that is past security in the airport. You're through security. You're clear. So that happens at the Olympics. So once you're inside of that security line, you can travel pretty freely from venue to venue, as long as the Olympics are laid out in a way that's conducive for that. And in Beijing years later, in London years later, it wasn't as good because, you know, the venues were further away. And so it was like you could go to three places, but that was it. You had to go back to the transportation hub. But in Athens, they did a pretty good job of making sure that, like, once you got into a venue, you could go to other venues. So I'm at the swim complex for Lord knows what, watching who knows what event. And my phone blows up and they say, you need to get to basketball. And I said, why? It's halftime of the USA-Puerto Rico game and Puerto Rico's given the United States all it can handle. No, certainly Puerto Rico was not going to beat USA. You had LeBron on that team. You had Carmelo Anthony on that team. You had Tim Duncan on that team. That's NBA All-Stars. They're playing Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico didn't even have a sneaker. I take that back. They did have a sneaker deal. It was with And One. So the guys with the And One shoes on that all looked like they were 40 years old were beating the United States dream team in Puerto Rico and went on to win the game. But I was not alone. Like, I got on the bus, the shuttle bus, to go over to see the United States team lose. And that's really what we were doing. We were going there to write about, hey, the fall of the dream team or whatever. And it was remarkable to me that, like, every major sports columnist of every major newspaper who wasn't already at basketball was jumping on the shuttle at every stop. Everybody was going to see what was going to happen. And we all expected kind of that the United States would rally in the second half and win that game. But the fact of the matter is, Puerto Rico played like a team. They had great culture. They weren't the most talented team, but it was their moment in that Olympics. And they did not win the gold medal in that Olympics. But it was their moment in that games to come together as a country, to play as one. It was like they, for an afternoon, were the San Antonio Spurs. They were running that motion offense. They were screening ball screens and screens. It was beauty. It was a thing of beauty. It was like a three-man weave with gazelles. But this Puerto Rican team had a big lumbering center. He was old. He couldn't move. It reminded me of Sabonis late in his career. They had some good young guards, but it certainly wasn't LeBron and Carmelo Anthony on the wing. And like, you looked at the United States and you're like, how in the world is this United States dream team losing to Puerto Rico? And I think about that when I think about Carmelo Anthony. And I said it earlier on the show. And I said it earlier about Carmelo and, you know, coming to the Blazers. And by the way, you know, is it great for the culture of this team if you have you bring in a Carmelo Anthony? But I remember the culture on that 2004 Summer Olympics roster. It was Allen Iverson. It was Stephon Marbury. It was Dwayne Wade. It was Carlos Boozer. It was Carmelo Anthony. It was LeBron, Sean Marion, Amari Stoudemire, Tim Duncan, Lamar Odom, Richard Jefferson. And you think about that group. That group lost 92-73 to Puerto Rico. They got beat by damn near 20 points by Puerto Rico. It was their biggest loss in Olympic competition history. They lost by 19 points in group play. They came back in game two. They played Greece. They barely beat Greece. That was like a, oh man, they're in real trouble moment. They lost three games in that tournament. They lost Lithuania. They lost Argentina. They lost to Puerto Rico. And that was the moment where USA basketball went, we need to start putting teams together. And it's no indictment, like, necessarily of Carmelo, but it certainly was like you had a guy who was 20 years old. He was 20 at that time in the Olympics. He was a young Carmelo. And it was clear to me, like, you would see Carmelo out in Athens. You would see LeBron out. You would see they were staying on the Queen Mary ship. But then they would go out and they'd be walking around, whatever. You would see these guys out, and it was clear to me, like, that wasn't a team. How could it be? Like, they just came together at the last minute. They had a bunch of guys like Iverson and Stephon Marbury and Dwayne Wade and Carmelo and LeBron. LeBron was bitching about minutes. I'll never forget it. He's bitching about minutes. Sean Marion. And you had a bunch of guys that, like, all needed the ball. And it didn't matter. People were like, you know, the Spurs, Greg Popovich and the Spurs, that's the mentality you need with an Olympic team. Do you know who the coaches were of that Olympic team? Larry Brown was the head coach. Greg Popovich was his assistant, his number one assistant. Roy Williams was his assistant. It was like you had Pop, Roy Williams, and Larry Brown. You had LeBron, Carmelo. You had Tim Duncan, Amari Stoudemire, Sean Marion, and Puerto Rico beat you by 20. So something was wrong there. And we all know that you don't have to have all the best players to win in basketball. LeBron is the best player in the game, and his team didn't win. You don't have to have them. You just need some of them. And I keep coming back to that with the Blazers and this pursuit of Carmelo Anthony. And I get the idea of trying to get out from under the contract of Carmelo Anthony. Like, if you're the Knicks, you want freedom from that. You want to move in a new direction. It's why I just don't think that, A, Carmelo does not want to come to Portland. If he did, he would have already said so. And B, if you're the Knicks, is it a better place to live if you are stuck with Evan Turner or Myers Leonard than stuck with Carmelo Anthony? Hell to the no. It's not a better place to live. So I just can't see it coming together for a number of reasons, unless there's, Carmelo's kid gets relocated to some school out here in Portland, and his, Lala, the mother of his child, wants to be here. Yeah, that's the mother of his child. She's Lala. That's the only reason I could see that happening. He does not want to come to Portland and get rained on. So let's get that out of our heads, and let's remember Puerto Rico when he gets traded to Houston. Because I'm not so sure Houston, everyone's talking about Houston closing the gap. I'm not so sure. With James Harden, Carmelo, that's not the selflessness of the Golden State Warriors replicated. That's a cheap knockoff. I've been to the Silk Market in China. They would be selling you the Houston Rockets as a contender at the Silk Market. By the way, you go to China, they will copy and rip off anything. You can go to the Silk Market in China, and you can buy a suitcase, you can buy a DVD, you can buy a watch, you can buy a laptop, you could buy any, and none of it's real. It's all knockoff, ripoff, stuck together and copied, and in their own cheap way. And there's no knockoff around it. Like, the Houston Rockets are a cheap imitation of an NBA contender. They've got some talent, they've got some players, but it's the closest thing I've seen to the United States men's basketball team in 2004. Like, give them Stephon Marbury and Allen Iverson, and let's put Larry Brown as the coach, because I just don't think they're going to be that close to the Golden State Warriors when it comes down to it. And I still think the most interesting thing is this Kyrie and LeBron thing, And it brings me back to another point, by the way. Like, I know that I see sports teams all the time, and you see this too. I think we can agree on this. You see teams that are distracted all the time. Their eyes off the ball. They're thinking about the wrong things. You see leagues that get distracted. Their eyes off the ball. They're thinking about the wrong things. For years, I felt like the Portland Trailblazers, and still to this day, are self-conscious and thin-skinned and worried about what you think or I think of them and what was being said about Neil Olshey, and their eye is so far off the ball. It's like that's your focus and that's your distraction. But let's be real, because I was thinking about this too last night. It's true of people as well. It's not just the sports teams that are thin-skinned and eye off the ball and whatever, even to the point of like kids today. The 14-year-old the other day asked me if she could download an app called Sahara. I don't know if you've heard about it. I mentioned it one other time on this show. It is bad juju. It is bad stuff. If you are a parent, I need you to look at your kid's phone tonight, see if they had this Sahara app. Because this Sahara app is bad stuff. It's dark. It is the ability for teenagers to contact each other using this app with anonymity. You can contact, like, I could contact Gliss, and I could say, those jeans make you look fat. And Gliss will not even know that it's me contacting him. It'll be anonymous. And the 14-year-old said to me, Dad, can I get this? Everybody who's on Snapchat has this thing. And I'm like, no. First of all, being anonymous is not a good thing. If you are anonymous, and that is criticism or input or commentary that you want to offer to somebody, and you're doing it under the shroud of darkness and anonymity, not going to have my name or my face to it, it's worthless to you. Somebody giving you that feedback is worthless to you. And by the way, is this not a drain on your time to be worried or focused on or giving somebody else? And it was the inventor of the app. I looked into it. The inventor of the app is a guy who said he developed it so that companies could get feedback from employees without fear of repercussion. To me, that's a company that's got its eye off the ball. You should be in the business of fostering the kind of culture where your employees can give you feedback without fear of repercussion. So you don't need the app if you're running business the right way. So I told her don't get it. And she had another friend, though, that does have it. And this other friend received a message about my kid that was disparaging. And she's annoying or whatever, you know, whatever 14-year-olds say about each other. And her feelings were hurt. And I said, you don't even have the app and your feelings are hurt. I said, imagine. She goes, thanks, Dad, for not letting me get it. And I said, you're damn right. Your friend should delete it, too. So if you're a parent, your kid has an app called Sahara. Get rid of it. Delete it. Ask them why the hell they're interested in it. It's bad news. But it gets me thinking, too, about sports teams and about our own lives. And I'm going to give you a little bit of advice from me to you. I walk around all day and I watch people eat up their time with their phones, eat up their time with things that don't matter, eat up their time with, I saw a lady playing Candy Crush the other day. I'm like, what value do you get in that? Take some of that time where you are dedicating your energy or time, if you're 14 years old to 104 years old, if you are dedicating your energy or time to something that truly doesn't matter, that doesn't enrich your life, that doesn't make you laugh, that doesn't make you feel good, that doesn't make you feel like you are putting yourself financially in a better position, whatever your end game is, whatever your goal is, take that one little thing that is draining you and do away with it. Like, I don't know what it is. It could be an addiction. It could be alcohol for you. It could be your phone for you. It could be, you know, just some drain of time or energy or focus. And you know what I'm talking about, because for all of us, it's something different. For some people, it's food. But get that out of your life. In the same way that, like, as a parent, I could reach over to my kid's phone and go, hey, get rid of that app. If you get nothing else from this radio show today, maybe you get, you know what, instead of sitting around complaining and focused on what I don't have or where I am, aren't in life and the promotion I didn't get or I'm getting a raw deal here or I don't have enough money to make the ends meet there. Instead of sitting around and doing that while playing Candy Crush or having some kind of addiction rule your life or having, you know, some distraction in your life where you're just blowing time away, burning it up, don't do what the sports teams do is what I'm saying. Because I do think we could look into the Blazers with a microscope, as I have often. And I think we could find the Blazers truly focused on stuff that doesn't matter while simultaneously giving us a bad product. Don't do that in your family. Don't do that in your household. Don't do that in your own life. Like, I look back and I was the first male in the history of my family to graduate from college. It was not an easy endeavor. My dad had played professional baseball. He had been offered college scholarships. He chose to sign professionally. My grandfather didn't go to school beyond the high school education. My grandmother dropped out in the fifth grade. It was like education was important in my family, but it simultaneously, like, I didn't know how to get from A to B. I didn't know when I was applying to college about internships and all these things that a lot of kids are really on top of. I look at kids today who come in who want to be part of this radio show and they're interning and they're going to school. And I'm like, that kid so much further ahead than me. So I had to do some things hard and I wasted a lot of time because of it. But I felt like always that I had my eye on the ball, that the goal to me was to be professionally successful. I wanted to write a column at a major newspaper. I eventually wanted a radio show. I thought TV would be good for me. I find my way to those things in part because I think I do a pretty good job of, like, shucking the corn, like getting the husk, get rid of the husk. You got to eat the corn at some point. So getting to the point, like, don't focus your energy on negative people, on negative things, on things that aren't conducive and productive for you. And this goes for sports teams as well. I would have that talk with Neil Olshey if he'd listen. He's so focused on what people are saying about him, what people think of him, his next job, all that stuff. And I get it. It's survivalist mentality. But damn, if you just build a winner in Portland and you're the guy that brings winning back to Portland, you're going to get that next job. And in fact, it'll probably be the kind of job you never want to leave. But that's what I'm talking about. Eye off the ball. Happens all the time. It happens to people who are rich and successful, just the same as it happens to people who are living on the poverty line. It's living below the poverty line. It is amazing to me jump on the MAX train, get on an elevator, and watch people. I'm in the Starbucks. There's a guy in front of me in line. I'm looking at him. He looks like, he's complaining to the guy next to him that, he's not going to make the kind of money this year that he made last year. And I'm going to myself, gosh, if you would spend some more of that energy and time, that passion that you have right now, bitching about what you don't have, maybe put it towards the things that would help you make more money, that guy would be more successful. I don't think it's complicated. And I'm sick of people sitting around complaining about what they don't have, feeling sorry for themselves. Stop doing that. I know the name of the show is The Bald-Faced Truth, so I'm going to give it to you that way. Coming up, we have In the Wake of the Week, which the producer of this show, who makes no apologies, says that he has 18 minutes of goodness in the Wake of the Week this week. Like, all the interviews from the week, including Yogi Roth and Mike Yam. I almost forgot Mike's name. The Pac-12 Network, they're going to be part of that. Plus, Gina Mizell, Danny Moran, all the great interviews that we had all week long. Steve Trevino, the comedian earlier, was phenomenal. We'll podcast that. We'll put it out there for you as well. But if I could just say one thing. If you have the Sahara app or your kid has the app, get rid of it. There is nothing someone can say anonymously to your kid that has value. It's like a bullseye in life. The people who are at the center of that bullseye should matter to you. That should be your significant other, your close friends, your family members, your children. Then the next ring is your trusted friends at work and all that stuff. And then we get out to the people who are throwing you anonymous hate. They're 3,000 miles outside the circle. I don't care what they think, and you shouldn't either. You're listening to The Bald-Faced Truth on the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Network.
More with John Canzano, The Bald-Faced Truth.
I'm not talking about people who are working 40 hours a week and doing all they can. They're focused. I'm not talking about people working harder to get ahead. I'm talking about people working smarter to get ahead. When your eye's off the ball and you're focused on things that don't matter, okay, that's when you are in trouble. And I'm here to tell you that I see a lot of people wasting their lives on Candy Crush and on social media and on their phone and doing things that are not conducive to success and then sitting around complaining. Like, if you like to be sitting around complaining, then don't, that's maybe you're successful at that. Some sad news coming out of Eugene. Apparently, the father of Oregon football coach Willie Taggart has passed away. This came down Thursday evening. He announced on Twitter on Thursday evening that his father, John Taggart, had passed away. He'd been ill for several weeks. Apparently, Willie flew back to Tampa to be with his dad and spend some time with his dad. But I would just say just one of those moments where it reminds you that the competitive drive of John Taggart, the work ethic there that Willie talks about all the time. His dad had that unmatched work ethic. We see that in the Oregon football coach all the time. But thoughts and prayers to Willie Taggart. I think I can say that without people saying, oh, football. It's not really a football thing. That's a life thing. Credit to K-Val in Eugene being the first to report that, even though Willie Taggart put it on his Twitter feed. Some people didn't know what to do with it. Some of the writers who covered the team, they're like, is that a news story? Is that not a news story? They're people, man. These are people. I think people want to know when stuff's going on in their lives. I do care about that. Care about stuff like that. And I think these football coaches are people. So thoughts and prayers to Willie Taggart, the Oregon football coach. In the Wake of the Week is coming up. I want to call your attention to John's Waterproofing. Go to bettercrawlspaces.com if you want to know about John's Waterproofing. This is a great company. This is a company that can help you with your home. If you go to bettercrawlspaces.com, you'll know what I'm talking about when it comes to mold problems, standing water under your house, basement finishing, waterproofing, crawl space repair. If you're worried about anything that has to do with the crawl space or basement of your home, John's Waterproofing give them an opportunity to give you a free estimate. Their service area goes all over the state of Oregon, Portland, Eugene, Salem, Beaverton, all Vancouver, Washington even. So if you are listening to this radio show, wherever you may be, John's Waterproofing can help you. So do that by going to bettercrawlspaces.com to get a free estimate, find out about their work, or go 877-526-8141. That's 877-526-8141. I leave you now with a segment of radio that we call In the Wake, Wake, Wake of the Week, Wake, Wake.
Get him on the show.
One of the best things that I've read recently came from Elliot Allman of the San Jose Mercury News, former colleague of mine, a guy who's immensely talented, great writer, great reporter. We had to get him on the show to talk about his Jim Plunkett piece, and he joins us now. Elliot, thanks for making time.
John, it's a pleasure to hear from you again. Hope all's well.
Plunkett says that his life sucks. What does he mean by that, Elliot?
He's in pain. You hate to say 24/7 because he does get some sleep in there, but like many of these guys, John, I'm sure you have stories yourself and you've talked to former players. These are people that we rever on their Sundays during their careers, and so many of them, like Jim, are suffering. Leaving a guy like this who doesn't really open up much to just kind of look at me and say, my life sucks.
Get him on the show.
CBS national recruiting expert, scout.com as well, joining us. Biggins, where are you right now?
I'm in Huntington Beach, California, trying to hide from my kids. They don't come in here and make a bunch of noise and ruin the interview.
Isn't that something, though? Like, I got a house full of kids, too. Whenever you have to take a call, like, we have a hand signal, I put up my hand, like, hey, I'm doing something important. I never do it. Greg Biggins with us, scout.com, CBS national recruiting expert. Oregon and this Willie Taggart thing, and Duck fans are celebrating the Ducks apparently with the number one ranked recruiting class to this point. What does it mean, Biggins?
I mean, I'll probably contradict myself. I think it means a lot, and it doesn't mean much at all at the same time. I don't think that makes any sense. So I'll explain that a little bit. I think it means a lot because it's a new staff, and every new staff always gets a kind of that new believer zeal bump, I kind of call it. Where, you know, staff comes in, they're energetic, they're ready to kind of turn things around, they're preaching a new message. And if it's a school like in Oregon, which already has, you know, a solid winning tradition with a lot to sell, you're going to see a bump in recruiting. So from that standpoint, to see them not just get a bump, but we're talking, you know, the number one recruiting class in the country, and it's not that early. I mean, we're in August now. So this isn't where, you know, one school has 20 commitments and everybody else, you know, has three or four. I mean, we're at a point now where several schools are in that double-digit commitment tracker. So for me, seeing how well the staff is doing, it's huge. Now, why I say it doesn't mean a whole lot is because right now, the way recruiting has gone the last 4 or 5 years, early commitments don't mean a whole lot. You know, and I would not be shocked, and this has nothing to do with Oregon, but in a typical class of 20, you're going to see probably 4 or 5 guys at some point will either decommit, maybe get dropped. You just don't know.
Get him on the show.
He's got great energy and he has a good sense of humor, and he joins us now. Dave Bartu, thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks, buddy. Well, somebody's got to make numbers fun. It's a pretty dry kind of thing, so if we can't add some humor into it, like subliminally trolling Oregon State fans not trying to find highlights, you know, what else are you going to do?
Dave Bartu is with us. Yeah, we had 8 wins last year in this state. 8 total wins. It wasn't easy to find highlights. Everybody's picking Washington and USC. I want to talk about the others, the 10 others in this segment. Who else? Is there somebody that could disrupt that you look at, or who has a shot to disrupt that?
Well, I mean, to me, there's really 2 things with college football. It's coaching and talent. Okay. And outside of USC, which has the most talent in the entire conference, and Washington, which is top 4 in talent and a really good coach, I'd look to somebody like Stanford. You're talking about a team that, you know, has the 3rd, 4th best talent profile in the conference. And I think Shaw's record pretty much, you know, speaks for itself. The guy can really coach. So, and I think it depends on who you ask. You know, Washington's schedule is extremely well set up for them this year. And I think that's why the edge is there. But if you want to talk about somebody that can knock them off, to me, you start with Stanford. And then I think your second tier, you have to look at Oregon and UCLA. You know, UCLA, there's a ton of talent there, but Chimp Moore, just, I don't know how that guy has a job. And I don't care about Josh, you know, Rosen. I think he's Hackenberg 2.0, and that's just not a good program there. I mean, for UCLA to upset USC and be that Pac-12 South representative, I think Mora and the rest of that program have to do something they haven't done in his entire time that he's been there, and that's just live up to the talent. So they have the talent, but, God, you couldn't get me betting on those guys because the guy is just a train wreck of a coach so far. Now you go over to the Oregon side of it. I think Oregon's just as talented as Stanford. Oregon's just as talented as UCLA. The big question mark is the coaching side of it. Taggart, been a head coach for 8 years. He hasn't been that good. He's had two decent seasons. The rest of them have been down, but you have the second-best defensive coordinator in the conference at Oregon, in my opinion. By the numbers of their career, and you look at their recruiting, yeah, it was down. Okay, it was trending down. The enthusiasm, the motivation wasn't there. Oregon made a change, and you see what that's done already on the recruiting trail. That being said, Oregon's still a near top 20 recruiter in the country over the last 4 years. I think there's a lot of talent there. And if you're looking for a real big wild card, I think you got to look at the one guy who has excelled better than anybody else in this conference, with as little talent as possible, and they have an NFL potential quarterback, that would be Washington State. That'd be your super way out there dark horse, because you have the quarterback, which Leach won't be able to probably keep healthy because all of his quarterbacks get the crap kicked out of them. But their schedule's not bad, and he's been able to work magic before at Texas Tech and has had some pretty good years at Washington State.
Let's start ruling out teams and ruling in teams that you think are going to be bowl eligible. Let's start at where we think the bottom of the conference is. Any shot Cal makes a bowl game?
Here's a shot you could die from a cold, but no, probably not.
Get him on the show.
I'm told there's a heavyweight champion on the phone. I don't like making a heavyweight champion wait. Larry Holmes, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you very much, man.
What are you doing today? What's Larry Holmes doing on a Tuesday?
I retired January, and I'm doing anything but sitting in this house and have fun a little bit, drink a little wine.
Sounds
I'm
good.
Having fun now.
Early in your career, you're a sparring partner with some really good boxer. What was it like to spar with Muhammad Ali?
Ali was one of the great fighters, man. He was a great guy. And he had to be there on time, and I was there on time. I ran with him. I did a lot, you know. Of course, I couldn't beat Ali at that time. I started with him, but I learned a lot, and I took every day I can and learned from him. And he was a good guy, man. But I tell you what, if you wasn't ready, when he was ready, he'd beat you up.
I look back at the heavyweight division with you in it, and obviously I was 10 years old when you fought Muhammad Ali, and you're the only person, I think, to knock out Muhammad Ali. You stopped that fight.
Yeah, I stopped the fight because, you know, hey, I knew what I could do because I had 4 years of working with him as a sparring partner, around for about 6 years, and I knew exactly what he could do and what he couldn't do, and learn from him. And I learned not to try to hurt nobody because I love that man. The man was great, gave me opportunities, took me in the house and fed me, you know. And I got a chance to learn how to fight. So, you know, and I didn't want to hurt the guy. I just wanted to go out there and do what I had to do without hurting him. That's all.
It's interesting. Is that hard to do, to beat somebody in boxing and at the same time you care about the guy?
It's like your brother. You don't want to beat up your brother. But sometimes you have to do it, and you have to show him who the boss. And that's what I had to do. I mean, he was my brother, but I had to show him who I was the boss. There. He had his day, and I got mine.
You grew up in a household that had 12 children. Your dad was a blue-collar guy, hard-working guy. How much did that give you work ethic?
Listen, my dad would get up if he's sick in the morning. If he's sick, he'd go to work. I mean, and I used to say the same thing. And what I used to say, when I didn't feel like running, I thought of the other guy. I said, he's out there running. But I didn't want to hit the bag. I said, this guy, I'm fighting, hitting the heavy bag or speed bag or jumping rope. If I want to keep up, I got to do the same thing. So I wanted to win. So that's what I did. I trained. I thought about the other guy, what he was doing, and how he felt.
and how hard he'll be training to beat me up. So I've done the same thing.
Larry Holmes, I appreciate you making time for us. I think there are a lot of people who, myself included, look back at your career and really appreciate the athlete that you were and the performances that you gave. You always came to fight, and I wish we had boxers like that today.
Yeah, me too. But hey, these guys are fighting for the big goal. You know, they like to win. They want to win. They want to be called champions. Winning a fight don't make you a champion. When, after you win the fight, makes you a champion. How you treat people and how what way you act outside the ring, that makes you a champion. Knocking somebody out, that don't make you a champion. Putting a belt around your waist don't make you a champion. Your personality makes you a champion.
Get him on the show.
So Yogi's coming in studio. Gliss is coming in studio. And Mike Yam's coming in studio. And they're about to walk in right now as this big entourage of people walk in. And they're going to invade the show. We're going to talk a lot about college football, but we have to deal with the man crush as well. Gliss, come on in. Mike, come on in. Yogi, welcome. Welcome to our workspace here. How are you? Good to see you guys. Yogi, somebody can pop over here. I was a little concerned about everybody making it up here because you don't know this, but Gliss has a man crush on Yogi. Like, anytime Yogi comes on, it's a big deal. And AC, you can get their mics all queued up, and we'll do this. Yogi, how are you?
Doing great, John. Thanks for having me on, man. Finally get to come into your dojo. When are you going to come into mine? Come on, man. Come down to Venice. Come into the booth. Go to San Fran. Let's roll.
Yam, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm ready for this party.
This college football season, I think, in the state of Oregon is... I've been here 15 years. I think this is the most interesting season because I think you've got... What is Oregon going to be with Willie Taggart? And can Gary Anderson make that leap to legitimacy? Like, and am I wrong in reading that, or does anybody else outside of Oregon care about this?
I think it's a big story. I've always felt that if Gary Anderson stayed at Wisconsin for an extra season, he would have been on the very short list of USC Trojans if things played out as they did with Sark. I mean, he's that big time of a coach. I know he's on your show all the time. I love listening to it. He's just got that standard about him that has raised the game. And it was so bleak when he took over that for me, at least this year, I can't wait to watch him practice this afternoon. They can pitch and catch. They can make plays downfield. This is a bowl team to me. This is a chance to 6, 7, 8 wins, how things shake out. And I'd be disappointed if they didn't do that. Now, the other side for Willie Taggart, the energy is infectious from his staff. I mean, he's been around a lot of practices. Yeah. Usually it's 3 guys running around, 4 guys, a lot of young guys. That staff jumps off the field. They jump off the page. And they've got dudes that are really young. You look at their D-tackle, Jordan Scott. He's a premier player in the country, not just for Oregon's defensive line. And they have another true freshman, Austin. I'm going to screw his last name up. Starts with an F.
Yeah.
99. Those two inside yesterday. They're impressive. And even on the corner, they got a mid-year true freshman playing outside. And they got so many young players that what it's creating is competitive depth. And competitive depth is how USC won when I was there. It's how UW is winning now and how I think the Chargers have made it back.
Mike, you see a practice like an Oregon practice compared to other practices. What do you see?
Yeah, no, 100%. I think the one interesting thing, and Yogi just brought it up, 34-99, because as we're roaming the sidelines there, Yogi just keeps saying 34-99, 34-99. And look, I mean, these are physically imposing guys. I think the one thing, and this is stop four for me later today when we're in Corvallis. Yogi's been to one more at ASU. I'll get to those guys in a little bit, in a week or so. But to me, it's hard to gauge because if you look at, you know, I sent you a text message in the middle of practice around the other side of the field. I said, who's their home run through at the wide receiver spot? To me, because when I looked at the UCLA guys at the wide receiver spot, that has been an ongoing storyline that we continue to track here, especially when you consider a quarterback like Josh Rosen. You just sort of say, well, who's going to be that guy? And I looked at Oregon's wide receivers, and at least from what I saw, they look like they have a bunch of the same dudes that are out there. So to me, that's one of the biggest things that I've seen. They look like they have Oregon, that is. They have so many guys that, I shouldn't say so many, they have a slew of players that look like they play the part. And I think the one interesting thing is the development over years of specific players. So a year ago, Justin Herbert was really not on our radar when we were on campus. To see him on the football field now, Yogi even made reference to this when we were at practice, kind of looks the part at this point. Royce Freeman's a guy, and we used to joke with him off air. Just say, the dude looks like a Greek god when he's on the football field. He looks bigger this year. Talked to Willie Taggart after the practice, and I said, is he actually bigger, or is my something wrong with like my vision? Am I just misremembering things? And he said, no, we did before and after pictures, and the dude is actually bulked up, which is scary. So, and in my mind, they're going to have to rely on him in a big way.
We're in studio. We have Mike Yam and Yogi Roth with the Pac-12 Network. They have invaded the studio. They're here to talk college football. The Oregon State thing, they've got a loaded backfield. You haven't seen them at practice yet today, but you will see them. Is that enough with a quarterback who can throw it a little bit and Gary Anderson's toughness? Is that enough?
No, I don't think it is. I think you got to be able to move the ball on critical downs and distances. You know, you'll should come. Again, I'm just inviting you. If you want to come week one, I'll be at Oregon. But Oregon State specifically, when we're in the booth this year, I'm not looking at any general stats anymore. That is so out the window. To me, it is critical downs and distances. It's not yards per game, but it's yards per play. It's points per drive. You've got to be able to move the ball. Last year, there were so many critical drops by Jordan Villeman. I'd say it to his face. He knows it. Victor Bolden at times on these third downs, they have to make plays. So I can't wait to see Isaiah Hodges.
Yeah.
Can't wait to see Seth Collins. We're doing a feature on him on the Pac-12 Network today. You know, I can't wait to see the development of Jordan Villeman because now you got this competitive depth of some of these young players, all 6'2 and above. You know, I think because they're going to want to run the ball, they've got to be able to make a couple plays. Those 3-4 slant and go seam reads. Obviously, Luden, we think, can make those throws. Can't wait to see it in person this afternoon. But that's critical. You have to be able to scare people so they're not just playing the run. You got to win man coverage because that's the majority of this conference.
I got a couple minutes left. I want to know from each of you what's the best part of your job? Because you probably get asked that by every like 15-year-old kid who wants your job. Mike, what's the best part of your job?
I think it's twofold. One, what we do at Pac-12 Network, I've been at a couple other different networks, started on the radio side, I was at ESPN, I was at NBA TV. It is so unique, the bond that I have with the other on-air guys. I mean, I talked to Yogi, not during football, well, we talked during football season, but we are talking all year long.
You almost want to ride in the same car as him.
you're exactly right about that. But like Kevin O'Neill, Don McLean, Curtis Conway, I am talking to those guys all year long. That's Burton. You know, we got this cast of characters, so the bond that you have, and you were talking about, you know, team chemistry, right? I mean, that to me is one of the coolest parts about this job that's so unique about what we're doing. I think it shows in the product. And then the other thing, I mentioned covering a lot of pro sports. The college athlete, man, it is really cool. We are, you know, we're starting our sixth year at Pac-12 Network now, and to see some of the guys, you know, a few years ago, and a great example, I actually saw you, Final Four, go back to the Elite Eight a couple of years ago with Oregon, and to see some of the guys that were freshmen when we were starting things up at Pac-12 Network, and then the conversations and the maturity and how they've matured over, you know, a 3-4 year period of time, to me is one of the coolest parts about it. I'm not even, you know, with those programs, I'm not a head coach that runs and invested all that time and recruited. So just for me to see some of those stories, see some of those student athletes really evolve has been super gratifying for me.
Got like 30 seconds, Yogi.
Sorry, Yogi, I dominated there.
He just killed you. But it's what's the best part of being Yogi?
I think it's the gratitude and the ability to see. You know, this network, when it started, you know, Mike and I both banged on the door for an opportunity to just get an interview. And when we did, and they put us in the position we're in now to stand here in front of you, is really unique. And I want to celebrate that. And you know, we want to lead the way. You know, we understand networks are changing, and we want to celebrate the game. And like I said, coach the viewer. I've had Kevin Calabro, Ed Robinson be my partner. I mean, what a gift that is. Cool. Be able to work with Mike. And then I literally mean it. 210 stories every weekend on the sideline. How many can we tell? How many can we compete to tell? And also remain honest to the game and tell the truth, just like I would if I was the coaches in front of me, if I was many critical of them. I think that's a gift to stand at the 50 every Saturday, be able to celebrate the game and coach my mom on cover too. I mean,